Okay. let's start with the second piece, the three Arwens, and then if there's time, we can double back. So I put a bit more for this piece.
We also have back, which is filled as much as this one.
Now it's my turn to talk. You keep doing your turkeys. excuse me. Okay, so Rashi's commenting on the tzipoy, the covering for the aron. Or we're told, you know, v'asu aron atze shitim, make a aron out of atze shitim. I'm blanking on what we...
Cedar wood?
Cedar, thank you. It's either, sometimes, there was another wood, the like acacia, I think. I can't remember what that was in Hebrew. It's not right. Either way. And then it gives us the dimensions, and then in Pasuk Yud Aleph, v'tzipisa oso zahav tahor mebayis umichutz titzapenu. So now we have to put a covering on it of gold on the outside and on the inside. And Rashi has a strange comment here, which is really just a quote from the Gemara. He says, shlosha aronos asa v'tzalil. V'tzalil made three arons. Shnayim shel zahav, echad shel eitz. Three of gold and two... Excuse me. Two of gold and one of wood. Three in total. Which is pretty bizarre, because that doesn't seem to be at all what the pasuk told him to do. Ara katalim v'shulayim v'chol echad petuchim l'malamala. So they each had four walls and a bottom, and they were open on the top. On source 5, there is no source 4. I deleted it and then didn't renumber everything. V'nasan shel eitz besoch shel zahav v'shel zahav besoch shel eitz. So he made a larger one out of gold, placed the wooden one within that gold one, and then placed a gold one within the wooden one. And then covered the exposed wooden edge that was showing in between the two golden aronos. He covered that with gold so that there was no wood showing. And as a result, it was covered on the inside and on the outside completely by gold. There was no exposed wood. And so why in the world did he do it like that versus just... I would have thought tzipisa, tzipoy, is a coating or a covering. Coat it somehow. The option that we'll see in a second is just, you know, kind of take little pieces of gold or chunks of gold and hammer it into the wood and you're done. Right. Yeah. Because the way at the beginning of Rashi there, the way he phrases it, again, from the Gemara, is Shlosha Aronos Asa Vatzala. The Vatzala made three arons. The Pasuk only told us to make one aron, and it was supposed to be wood, and then you cover the wood. So it's a little bizarre. So now the Maharal is going to expand upon that. So in source 6, in line 1, Nir Masha Hutzruchu Lomar, it appears that the Gemara, why it kind of felt forced to say that, or what compelled it to say that, is Shlosha Aronos Hayu, that there were three Arons. Lo Kamashmo Shayu Metzafe Oso Chatichos Chatichos Divukim Ala Eitz, and not as what would just seem to be the plain, you know, implicit understanding, is that they took pieces of gold and attached them to the wood. Why didn't they say that? Ki im Hayeha Tzipoy Nidbakbo Ach Efshar Liparid Misham. Because if they had done that, where they attached the gold, the covering, to the point where it was, you couldn't take it off, they glued it or hammered it on, haize tosfos ala aron. This would be an addition onto the aron. Dekala mechubar ledavar hari batal eitz lo kamohu. Anything which is attached to an object becomes one with it. It's nullified in contrast to it. Now, the Torah nitna shir la aron amasayim v'chetzi arko, and the Torah gave a specific dimension, shir measurements for the aron. So now, if we're adding on gold and we're attaching it kind of permanently, then we're shifting that dimension. We're making it larger than it really should be. And so too for its height. And if we hammered or glued on the gold, we would have messed up the measurements. Now that each aron was separate and not attached, you know, really solidly to one another, then it's not considered an addition measurement-wise. So it sounds like the Gemara is saying that the wood itself followed the measurements that are listed in the Pasuk. Even though that outer covering of gold may have sent the measurement a tiny bit over, since it's not truly attached, it doesn't contradict the measurement given to us in the Torah. Does that make sense?
I don't get that. How is that any different in like one case than from the other?
From the perspective of just taking out a measuring stick, it doesn't seem to be any different. But he's saying that qualitatively, since one is attached and one is not, the one that's attached goes against the measurement in the Torah because it all becomes one object. Whereas once... Sorry?
I thought we were saying it doesn't...
When they're not attached. Saying the two options were to either hammer it the gold on, just take pieces and hammer it on the outside. And in that case, that would be adding on to the dimensions, and that would be a problem. But here, we made three different arons and just kind of plopped them all together.
But the outside box also had a layer of gold around it. So why didn't that make it go over the measure?
Well, the outside box was the layer of gold. And it seems to
be... Oh, meaning they made an outside box of gold?
Yeah. Sorry, there's one box of wood... And then a box of gold inside and a box of gold outside.
Oh. I thought they were all, like, two of them were just covered in gold.
Yeah. But it's still... That's his argument. Whether or not that we find that compelling is a different story. But he's saying since it's not attached and it's not becoming an intrinsic part of that object, it doesn't go against the measurement given in the Torah.
So really, if you looked at it, it was bigger than what the measurements were supposed to be because only the middle box was the right size.
That's what he doesn't say that explicitly, but I think that's what comes out of his comment, yeah. And that's the whole reason he has to talk about the qualitative difference between hammering it in and just having three different
boxes. Right, because the other one seems worse. Like, now it's so much bigger because there's a whole...
When I first read it, that's what I thought too, but you have to look at it slightly
different.
Yeah, that's even though they're all boxes, it's interesting because the Gemara that Rashi quotes is strange. Why did Bezalel do it like that? And then the reason he gives to us, we kind of just at first glance would think is also a strange reason, but. That's kind of so let's finish 4 and 5 and then we'll go on. He has the rest of this piece. He touches on a very fascinating idea that we'll see more about in on the back. Va'od she'im ye nidbak ha'zahav al ha'et ye tzarech lachnis mizmar shel zahav be'et. Furthermore, if you wanted to actually attach the gold to the wood, you'd have to use nails. A golden nail, you'd have to to hammer it into the wood. The Torah Amra Shel Eitz. And the Torah told us, Asu Aron Atse Shitim. It has to be wood. Velo Ye Shel Zahav. And it should not be of gold. Aval Hashted Asa Shlosh Aronos. Now that Bezalel went and made three arons, Kol Echad Be'echad Bifnei Atzmo, and each one is independent. He didn't have to hammer anything in, and so the wooden one, which is a fulfillment of those words in the pasuk, has no gold actually hammered into it. It's pure wood, and it's therefore fulfillment of that pasuk. Which still carries somewhat of that. It's almost ironic that we're told to make a wooden aron and then cover it with gold, and then what comes out is we make three arons. I mean, the way it's phrased, at least. Yeah.
Could they not? I mean, I don't know. Couldn't you just pour liquid gold onto it?
I guess. I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how that. Yeah, I don't know how that process works. And I wonder if he would say this. I mean, it might singe the wood. I don't know if it would catch it on fire, but I wonder if he would say the same argument, though, that that's just as bad as hammering it in, because maybe that would kind of attach itself to the. It might get a little bit absorbed into the wood, and then it becomes one. Because he's saying it's when you hammer the gold into the wood, then it becomes batzel. It nullifies to the wood, and so then the measurements start to shift. But now that they're separate, the measurements don't shift. That's a very kind of, I guess, practical, construction-minded.
Back then they also couldn't really know a lot more just about the chemistry and how things work in general. Except it looks like the gold's now attached. It's like part of the wood now. Do you think they're able to tell that?
I don't know. I don't know if he's arguing from the perspective of science or just that idea of kal davar chubar ledavar hari batzal etz lo kamohu. I think that's more of a halachic argument that we would say things like that in halacha, whereas regardless of what science would say about it.
Well, how attached does something have to be to fit in that category? Like this tape cap? Like if we taped something? Or like that maintains its identity enough?
I'm not sure. That tape might not. That might be like in by Tofer and Shabbos, the melacha of Tofer, of literally tying. There is some carryover to kosher for not tying, sewing, and then kosher is tying. When we talk about tape and things like that, then it has to be. One of the categories that we talk about, is it miskayim? Is it going to stay like that? Is it kind of quasi-permanent in a sense? So it could be that there's a similar category here for when something will become batel. I'm not entirely sure. Okay. Let's go into line six. Now we're going to leave aside the construction element, and he's going to talk about something which I found very interesting. So he says, Hiksha Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra has a difficulty. Kevin Chayatarich, I'll call upon him Leos Osei Shlosha Arona, since at the end of the day he had to make three Arons. Shnaim Shel Zahav, Ve'echad Shel Eitz. Yasei Echad Shel Zahav. Why is Betzalel doing all this extra work? I guess more accurately, why is Hashem commanding him to do this all this extra work? Just tell him, make one aron of gold and be done with it. The wood's there, but it's completely covered, so why not just make it of solid gold? There were other elements, the menorah, for example, that was made out of solid gold, so just do the same thing here. And he doesn't give any answer from the Ibn Ezra, he just goes straight to his answer in line 7. So he says, Shirazal, the Chachamim, Chazal, Nasnu Kavar Tam Midrash. Chazal have already explained or hinted to a rationale in the Midrash Tanchuma, where it says, Lefisha Torah Nikres Eitz Chaim, because the Torah is called an Eitz Chaim, therefore the Aron needs to be made out of wood. Lecha Chaya Aron Shal Eitz. Meaning to say that the Torah is called an Eitz Chaim, and Aron needs to be made out of wood because it's carrying the Torah, and it's symbolic of that fact, that the Torah is an Eitz Chaim. But davar zeh davar amok. This is a very deep matter that we've just hit upon. Ki haTorah nikreis Eitz Chaim, hi l'machzikim ba. The Torah is called a Eitz Chaim to those who cling to it. L'fichach chaya Aron shel Eitz. Therefore, the Aron, again, was of wood. Now he's going to take that and explain that. Kia etu natia kaiemis. Wood is a planting or a sapling which survives. Yeah, I've been trying to think of a better English word for that, but in Natia, he's going to explain what that category means. Kach divrei Torah hem mischabrim unetuim dveikim im Hashem Yisbarach. So a tree is something which is planted in the ground. It has a huge root system under the ground that we don't necessarily perceive immediately, but it's there. So to divrei Torah are in some way the same, follow the same pattern with Hashem, that we have the Torah in front of us, we have Tanakh, Gemara, etc. But on some deep level, they are rooted in Hashem Yisbarach. V'hu kayam netzchi, and Hashem obviously is eternal. V'shvil zeh hu kayam la'ad. And as a result, v'shvil zeh hu, meaning the Torah, is also eternal. Because its kind of source of sustenance is Hashem, and therefore, since the source of sustenance is eternal, it too becomes eternal. V'ilu azahav, whereas if the aron had just been made out of gold, afo gav dehu chashuv, even though it's a precious metal, eino natia, it is not a planted item. Which seems like he's saying that we specifically used wood because it comes from a living object. And that living object teaches us that idea of kind of, I guess, being linked or sustained by something else. Just as the tree has its roots in the ground and it's gaining all of its nutrients and sustenance from the ground, so too the Torah is linked to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it has its kind of spiritual life force from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Aval hatzipoy hu shel zahav, but the covering, so that's why we needed the wood. And now he has to tell us, why did we need the gold? It's kind of flipping the difficulty, where once you've told me why it needs to be wood, just do away with the gold. Aval hatzipoy hu shel zahav, and we did need that. Futam mufla lios hadavar nirei shel zahav, and it's a tremendous reason why the exposed side should be gold. Al shem orech yamim yamino v'smola osher v'kabod, that the length of his days shall in on its right and on the left osher v'kabod. V'yadua ki orech yamim olam haba, that the idea of orech yamim, that is olam haba. So we're saying that's b'mina on the right. She'ena nira, and olam haba, obviously we have zero perception of. Ein lo rasa elohim zulasecha. There I forgot to change elohim to elohim. L'fichacha eitz, therefore eitz, hamor al netia nitzchis. Therefore, wood, which is symbolic or teaches us of that kind of permanent planting, meaning here he's saying it hints to olam haba. It's completely covered and hidden. Whereas kavod, it's right here in this world. So I think what he's saying is that the wooden aron refers to something which is planted, which is the Torah. And it carries with it olam haba, that we can attain that through the Torah. But that, in our lives right now, is completely hidden. And that's why it's covered in gold. So all that we see is kavod. We see the kavod of the Torah, but we don't see that olam haba element of it. V'vichach haya shel etz besocho, v'haya nirei osher v'kavod. Therefore, that's why the wood was inside and covered by gold. Od kasher tavin timtza od. Furthermore, when you understand, which I can't completely say that I do, you'll understand more. Ki hayatarich lios eitz besocho v'azav mibechutz mibifnim ki ken roi hu v'nachon lefi ha-chokhmah, because that's what's fit and appropriate and correct according to wisdom. So obviously he had more to say, but he didn't say it. But that idea of the Torah being a netiyah, a planting, is something that he talks about elsewhere, and they note this in the footnotes in the kind of this big, whatever this is, Michon Yerushalayim printing. So if you skip to the last source, source 9, he expands upon this and a few, I think, additional ideas to what we've already seen in the piece from our Parsha come out that I think are very beautiful. So he says, this is in a different sefer, in Derech Chaim, which is his commentary on Perkei Avos, I believe. This is in the introduction to it. So he says, Uma shenikra HaTorah Eitz, v'derech Eretz Derech. So with regards to the fact that the Torah is called a tree, and this idea of Derech Eretz is called a Derech, why? Mipnei Shiratza. And we're only going to focus on the first part, why the Torah is called Eitz. Mipnei Shiratza Lomar Ki HaTorah Hi Netzia Chazaka. It's teaching us that the Torah is a strong, strong planting. Kamoa Eitz Hazeh Shehu Netua B'Chozek. Just like a tree which is firmly planted in the ground. V'yesh Lo Shrashim Gedolim, has huge roots in the ground. Asher Hem and if all the winds in the world were to come, it's not going to uproot the tree. Even though obviously sometimes that does happen. There's I grew up in Charleston, South Carolina, and in Charleston there's a huge oak tree called the Angel Oak, which is hundreds and hundreds of years old, and it survived some of the biggest hurricanes to hit Charleston, and it's still there. So there are huge trees, and also in California there's these.
My mommy said this, and one of the hurricanes, it was parts of this plant of what was, it got blown up in the wind, shattered, and also some of the shingles on their roof blew off.
Must have been
awesome.
A big hurricane.
Also true.
Yeah.
But that, right, so the angel oak is there, and it's just this enormous tree. But like he says, you can't see the roots. Kach haTorah hi netia chazaka. So the Torah is the same exact way. Netias haTorah hi im Hashem Yisvarach. Instead of being like a tree which is planted into the ground, it is you planted within Hashem Yisvarach. Asher mimenu Yisvarach etzula haTorah, because this is recording. The Torah is kind of given over by him. Torah zos mesuderes miito. It comes completely arranged from him. Kamo sheyisbar od b'kamim mekomos eicha netia hazos yotzeis min Hashem yisbarach. Kamo sheet yotzei mekomim tia so hi adama. Just, and we'll explain many times, I guess throughout his sfarim, how this works exactly. In kol baya olam baim la kor haTorah einam yochon lazuz osa af b'davar echad. And if all the different people of the world were to try and come and uproot the Torah and negate the Torah, they would not succeed, even with one matter within it. So that's a different lesson than we saw from our parsha, but it's also from the same idea, from the same symbolism rather of eights, and that would tie in to why the Aron itself was made of eight, that it has that same property about it, that it's immutable. And linked to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a very deep, intimate level. And now the next bolded part in line 8, Nikreis Eitz Chaim, is called an Eitz Chaim, specifically, Shemora al Nitzchi Satora Mitzad Atzma. And the fact that we ascribe or predicate the word Chaim to Eitz there tells us that it is eternal of its own right. Not just that it can't be uprooted by others, but that even if it were left alone, it will never be nullified. Whereas a tree does not live forever. Nothing living lives forever. And not that we should say that the Torah is only for a certain time period. V'yesh l'Torah hefsek mitzad haTorah atzma, that it itself has some sort of time limit placed upon it. V'fichach nikreis haTorah eitz chaim, and that's why it's called an eitz chaim. Sh'adavar shenikra chaim Ein lo hefsek. Anything which is called chaim has no interruption. It is eternal. Kamo mayan mayim chaim. Just as a spring of living water, shumakor she'ein lo hefsek. It's a constantly flowing. What if a spring were to stop flowing in the Torah or in halacha, it would no longer be considered a mayan. It would lose that halachic status. Which might be a little ironic, because then we're saying it loses that category, but now, according to what he said, it should never be able to stop. But okay, there it could. But in terms of this, obviously a tree can die, so we're not going to call it an eighth kind. But the Torah is the eighth kind because it can never be negated. Where's my watch? Okay. So then in the end piece here, he says in line 20, "Ve'elo shtei amilos shenizkreis ha-Torah eitz chaim, ramaz lacha ki ein la-Torah bitol hen mitzad achayim hen mitzad atzma shel Torah." And so as a result, we get this hint to us that the Torah can never be negated by others, nor will it intrinsically be negatable. Both externally and internally, it cannot be negated. And it also grants life to those who cling to it. And as a result, through Torah, we can cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we ourselves have a level of netiyah, of planting to Hashem. Ki netiyas haTorah yotzei min Hashem Yisbarach, lefichach hi eitz chaim lemachzikim ba, v'zei shedirshu eitz chaim zo Torah. And this is why Chazal say eitz chaim. What does that mean? The tree of life? It means Torah. But he did something interesting there in that last bit. He suddenly shifted from talking just about the Torah to now it's also people who interact with the Torah. It can be a person, not just the Torah, who is a netia, a planting. And that, I think, obviously it's an additional hint on top of what we've seen. And if you look in source 8, he's talking on with Abraham. It's toward the end of, where are we here? This is Parshas Vayera. It says that Abraham vita Eshel the Be'er Shava. He planted an Eshel in Be'er Shava. And Rashi quotes Rav Shmo Chad Amar Pardes Levi Memenu Perus Le'orchem B'Seuda. So one, we don't know exactly who, said that it was an orchard to provide fruit for guests at the meals that he would set out for them. The other said no, it was an inn for guests, and there happened to be fruit provided within. Now the Maral has a interesting expansion upon those two approaches, and he mentions this idea of a planting, of a netia. That's what Avram did, but he's going to apply it to a person, like he just kind of hinted to at the end of the other piece. So in source 8, Tadamar Pardes, Yeshli Tmoa Ma Nafkili Mine in Pardes Hayakundak. So we can kind of ask the difficulty, what do I care what it was? What difference does it make to me if it was an orchard or an inn? It's not really any practical implications, seemingly. However, I think there's a tremendous hint to us here. So let's at least do the first couple lines here. Kilamanda Marshanata Avram Pardes. According to the approach that says Avram planted a pardes, this teaches us, Rotz Lomar, ki roi la Avram netias a pardes. It was fit that it makes sense that Avram should himself plant a pardes, an orchard. V'ma she'Avram hu dome umesiaches la pardes. Because Avram himself is comparable, linked to the idea, the category of an orchard. Mipnei she'apardes yeshbo ilanos natuos. And why is that? Because a pardes is comprised of planted trees. Kach Avraham hu anetia harishona. And the link there is that Avraham himself was, quote unquote, the first netzia, the first planting. Shehari b'shvil Avraham nivra olam. The world was created for Avraham. Nidni shahayu shnei alfim tohu. And there, before Avraham, there were 2,000 years of kind of spiritual barrenness, apparently. V'lo haya mitzius lehem ad sheba Avraham. And there was no spiritual reality, I guess in the sense of real monotheism, until Avraham came around. And he changed that. The world went from that barren, plain state to having this idea of growth and vivaciousness and living, being alive. Avraham was the first planting that Hashem put into the world. The fichach roy lo shita parde shahaya doma Avraham leolam kamo hanetia kach Avraham beolam vayanetia misbareches menu nenin hakol v'chol asher yishal. And that in turn was an orchard for all those around him, a spiritual orchard in the sense that he was able to influence those around him. Which then you can tie that back into our piece where the aron is made out of an eitz, which is an itia, and that idea of a planting or something which is planted has a root system that we don't see. He has a couple different lessons from that. One, that it's the Torah itself is linked to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that same manner, and that we can have that link with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the Torah. But that also we ourselves can be a planting, an itia in this world, both through our link to the Torah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and provide help, whatever other word, inspire others around us, to benefit others through kind of growing our own spirituality and our own connection to the Torah and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
I have a question on just source of mine quickly.
Yeah.
Does it ever talk about Derech? Like what Derech is?
It does. I may have cut it off though. It's here. It's the end of line. Line 14. Aval derech eretz nikra derech ki hu a derech hayashar shein anote liyamin u'smol rak holech biyosher ki kol derech holech biyosher nikra derech chaim. I don't know if that really answers it per se, but he says a derech eretz is called a derech because any straight path which doesn't veer to the right or the left, just goes straight, is called a derech chaim. Mipnei ki derech eretz hu tochachas musar. I'd have to look and see if there's more, because I don't know if that... It's a strange... There must be more that he expands upon, because that doesn't seem to really answer. He's saying a derech... When you have a straight path, that's called derech chayim. And derech eretz is called that. I mean, presumably because it's tochachas moser, it's a rebuke of sorts, so it's keeping you kind of on the straight path. But it drops the word chaim in doing that. So that's a little confusing. I'll have to look.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming.